Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. The second and third segment today, I am pleased to have James Corbett interview that was previously recorded Wednesday evening, but it is very much up to date. We didn't talk much about the Kavanaugh hearings and the debacle that's over the circus that's going on in D.C. He didn't want to talk about that. And so we talked a lot of we talked about China, and it was a great conversation with James Corbett. And I want to make sure to encourage you to visit his website, thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. And of course, he's also the lead writer for the International Forecaster. And of course, I know many of you remember Robert Chapman, and Bob chose James Corbett to take over when he knew that he wouldn't be able to do it any longer. So make sure you you can go to their website, the International Forecaster, support the family, support James. We also put an article in there, and the internationalforecaster.com. Ask for a complimentary issue. We're going to get started today. It is Friday, October 5th, 2018, and it's been a really slow news day. Usually where I obtain my financial news, and they usually have it segmented out in, you know, morning news, afternoon news, evening news. Not today. There was about 15 different articles. But they were all the same report by different agencies. So, I mean, it's like, and I searched everywhere high and low to find something interesting, but I did find a few things. We'll talk about the jobs report and so forth. And but let me go ahead and get to the gold and silver prices today. We have gold did maintain that 1200 level, 1204. That's $1,204 for gold today, up $3.30. Silver was up 4 cents today at $14.72. Platinum was down a dollar at $826. Palladium had another big day, up 16 at $1,078. The USDX today was down 0.14 at 95.62. Crude oil is holding at 74.33. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow was down 180 points at 26,447. The NASDAQ was down 91 points at 7,788. The S&P was down 16 at 2,885. The 10-year yield continues to climb 3.22%. That was up today. That popped after the jobs report came out. The euro was a little bit stronger. The futures contracts for gold, that's probably, I don't know if that's December's. Let me see what I can pull it up. December contract for gold is 1207, and silver's contract was actually a little weaker, but stronger in gold. So, but yeah, doesn't really mean that much. But you know, the spot prices today were again that 1200 level, I believe, is very important. Let's see what else is going on the European and Asian markets. The Asian markets were, you know, basically flat overnight. London and Germany were all over. We're all down over 1%. What I found interesting, again, the emotion that's driving the market, 33. That's a big drop in a week from what we've been seeing. You know, from a greed number, you know, to we were up there by, you know, the 70s, the low 70s. And in a week, we're down here in 33. So a lot of things are going on behind the scenes that they don't want most investors to know about. And because, heck, you might want to sell your paper and buy some gold. They don't want you doing that. And if they do agree that you should have some gold, they're going to try to sell you some paper gold. Let's get you in some ETFs. We can sell you this stuff. Folks, paper gold is not the same as real gold, taking physical possession of it. Miners, mining shares is not the same thing as owning gold. It's paper, That's what you own. It's not the real thing. So don't get confused and don't allow them to talk you into something when deep down you know that you should be buying physical gold and silver. The stocks today fell to a three-week low. They did pair some of those losses. Of course, the plunge protection team always comes in. Let's see if there was anything else. The NASDAQ 100 index remained the worst performing major index. And of course, the tech shares came under pressure from the concerns of the U.S.-China and the U.S. and China trade spat is going to only intensify. The S&P also cut its losses in half today, but they're still on track for a second weekly decline. And let's see, U.S. jobs growth, that slowed sharply in September. Of course, they're going to blame it on Hurricane Florence and how it depressed the restaurant and retail payrolls. But yet, the unemployment rate fell to a 49-year low of 3.7%. And, of course, that points to a further tightening in labor market conditions. Now, if you remember, I said the ADP Wednesday. It's funny. The ADP number on Wednesday, when it came out, it was, what, 230,000 jobs? The non-farm payrolls were increased, ADP, and the news cycles had this huge number, 230,000 jobs. Today, you can't find this number anywhere. But the non-farm payrolls increased by 134,000 jobs last month. 134,000 jobs last month. So they're going to blame the hurricane. But yet there was some interesting commentary about that Hurricane Florence, that where it landed, and yes, there was flooding and damages, but it really wasn't in a very large populated area. Now, that's not to say, you know, businesses and so forth, didn't get hurt. Certainly not the same as it was in Houston, you know, last year. So not to take away from the flooding, because I understand that when you're affected by it, it's devastating. But they're blaming Hurricane Florence from these low numbers and 134,000 jobs last month. And that's the fewest in a year. The retail, as I mentioned, and the leisure, hospitality sectors shed the most. And let's see, the Labor Department said, again, the Hurricane Florence could have affected some industries. Let's see, what's some other let's see if I can find any interesting details in this report. Let's see, last month it was 17,000 jobs that the leisure and hospitality sector fell. This was the first drop in that area since 2017, with payrolls at bars and restaurants tumbling by 18,000. Retail payrolls dropped by 20,000 jobs in September. Manufacturing payrolls, they increased by 18,000 in September after rising by 5,000 in August. Construction companies, they hired 23,000 more workers last month after increasing payrolls by 26,000 jobs in August. And I think, you know, the reason in September is we've had a lot of warm weather, so they've been able to continue to build and continue to hire and expand. Professional and business services employment increased by 54,000 jobs last month, and government payrolls rose 13,000. And so another interesting report that came out, the U.S. trade deficit increased to a six-month high in August, as we saw exports dropping further amid declining soybean shipments and imports hit a record high, suggesting that trade could weigh on economic growth in the third quarter. So the trade deficit continues to deteriorate. The trade gap surged 6.4% to a six-month high of $53.2 billion in August. And the politically sensitive goods trade deficit with China, that surged 4.7% to a record high of $38.6 billion. And they adjusted it for inflation. If we adjusted this for inflation, when adjusted for inflation, the trade gap widened to $86.3 billion in August, and that's the highest since January of 2006, and from $82.4 billion in July. So the jump in the so-called real trade deficit suggests that trade could subtract as much as 1 percentage point from gross domestic product in the third quarter. So, you know, if we're, you know, hovering around that 4% or even into the high threes, it's going to drop a full percentage point. Let's see if there's anything else. Imports of goods and services increased 0.6% to a record $262 billion in August. And they boosted by imports of motor vehicles, and it was the highest on record, and cell phones. And, of course, there were also increases in petroleum products. Well, you know, the big talk this week was how Amazon, Jeff Bezos, the CEO, increased the company's minimum wage to $15. We talked about this yesterday, how also Amazon, Jeff Bezos, the CEO, cut in other areas, bonuses, stock options, to where people get hurt. And the way I see it, that's so he can increase the minimum wage. So, you know, it's a give and take. Some are going to gain, some are going to lose. So, and it affected all range. It just wasn't the high end people that get these high bonuses and so forth. You know, but they become to depend on an income, and all of a sudden it's cut. So it hurts everybody. Today, Senator Bernie Sanders, he's targeting McDonald's. He wrote a letter to the CEO, Steve Easterbrook, on Thursday, and Sanders demanded McDonald's boost workers' paychecks and let workers unionize. Sanders, as we know, had called on Amazon. He says if McDonald's raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour and respected the constitutional rights of your workers to form a union, it would set an example for the entire fast food industry to follow. Well, now all of a sudden he's concerned about the constitutional rights of McDonald's workers. Well, he should be concerned more about the constitutional rights of the citizens of this country. And speaking of that, I mean, I haven't been able to follow all the speeches made in reference to Kavanaugh. I heard a couple this morning. I heard Weinstein and Schumer, and their colors really came out. It wasn't about a woman and what happened to her and her grief, if that was even true. You know, their true colors really, it was all about gun control. You know, it was all about abortion. They're scared to death that those will be reversed and that they can't fight and take that away from the people of the United States. And and I heard them say something about what the American people, most American people, don't want the abortion reversed on Roe v. Wade. And they kept saying the American people thought all about the way the Democrats did. Well, it's not about, to me, it's not about what the American people want to some degree. It should be about the Constitution. I mean, the Constitution doesn't change with views of people. The people are supposed to live within the Constitution as these politicians. But I really believe you saw the colors of these Democrats. Their hatred of guns, the love of abortions, doesn't have anything to do with Dr. Ford. But that was just used. And I couldn't stand to listen to their speeches anymore. And when old McConnell came on, I couldn't even listen to him because he really didn't defend Kavanaugh very much, I didn't think. But anyway, that's just my view. And like I said, I didn't have a chance to follow it much today, but I'm going to get back to McDonald's because that's where my expertise lies. But But here you have Sanders talking about respecting the constitutional rights of the workers. And in a response to Sanders' demands, McDonald's pointed to its employee benefit programs. Our commitment to the communities we serve includes providing opportunities for the employees to succeed. They have training. They help them build their skills. They are committed to provide employees with $150 million of tuition assistance over the next 5 years. Well, you know, if they increase that $15 minimum wage, that means that $150 million of tuition assistance over the next 5 years is going to be decreased. It's going to have to come from somewhere. And that's what happens. It's either going to go into the product or the cost of the product. You know, perhaps they'll advance their automation to eliminate employees. I mean, minimum wages at $15 comes at a cost, because the real reason that we need $15 and $20 minimum wages in order to survive, it isn't. Yeah, it is because of the profits going directly to the tops, but it's also about inflation. It's also about the devaluation of our currency. It's also about our dollars buying less and less. I mean, why do you think our health care is at where it's at today? Or oil prices, everything is more and more, costs more and more. They disguise the inflation. We exported our inflation to China, and here we are today, now having a trade war. Because it temporarily helped the multinational corporations. And so we need to address our monetary policy before any of these problems really can be fixed. And before any of these problems are going to be fixed, I think we all know what's going to happen. There's going to be a major correction, a devaluation. You've heard the term reset floating around lately. We've been talking about resets, purgings of the systems for years. We just don't know when it's going to happen. And we still have the wages. I mean, the U.S. labor market has come a long way in recent years. Yeah, people are still working, you know, two jobs to pay, you know, in order to get by, because they're working part-time. They can't get enough hours. And the only reason we might be seeing, we're not seeing wages rise, maybe we're just seeing people working more hours to increase their household funds. So, you know, yes, the U.S. labor wage has come a long way, but people still aren't making enough in order to pay for the health care and to keep their standard of living. And any bump along the way, it's going to hurt severely. 1-800-375-4188. Convert that paper money into gold and silver while you can at these low, low prices. We're heading into a break. I'm Melody Searstrom, and when we come back, I'll be joined with James Corbett.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and yes, I'm very pleased today to welcome back to the program James Corbett. And a little info on James. He's the founder and editor of the Corbett Report that was started in 2007. And in 2012, he became the editorial writer for the International Forecaster that was created by Robert Chapman, the economic analyst that was spent many years on the radio with Bob, and learned so much from that gentleman, just as we learned so much from James. And you can visit James' website at thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. And if you'd like to read his writings, you can request a complimentary copy of the International Forecaster by going to their website, theinternationalforecaster.com. And it's still a great publication. A lot of people put in articles. They've kept the newsletter going quite well, James.
They certainly have. So I hope people who haven't checked out the newsletter before will go and do so, theinternationalforecaster.com.
And also to your website, and also to support you. Let's see. I don't even know where to start tonight, James. I mean, if you live here in the United States, I mean, you know, I have 3 pages of things that we're going to talk about. I think why I usually start with the program, is there anything in particular on your mind that you'd like to share with the listeners before I get to some questions?
Well, sure. Something from my neck of the woods that caught my eye, because I've been talking about it recently. We've been talking about the One Belt, One Road project that China's been working on for the last couple of years, and this big $1 trillion idea to basically connect all of this infrastructure together in a big trading route that will cover, well, basically the entire globe at this point. It seems that every foreign policy initiative, every infrastructure investment, everything that China is doing abroad is being put under this Belt and Road Initiative. But we've talked in recent weeks about the fact that there's starting to be a little bit of worry on the part of some of the recipients of this Belt and Road largesse, that it is in fact a debt trap. That, for example, we've talked about Sri Lanka having a deep sea port that was recently taken over by China because they couldn't afford the payments on the low interest loans. Come on, guys, we'll invest in your infrastructure and then take it over. So there's been a lot of wariness about that in recent months specifically. For example, we saw recently elected Prime Minister Mahathir in Malaysia talking about downgrading and downsizing some of the Chinese infrastructure projects that have been slated. Latest coming from Myanmar, which has just cut the cost of a Chinese-funded port project by 80%, slashing the initial price tag of the overall project from $7.2 billion to $1.3 billion, quite a drastic reduction. And this is being, at least the subhead on this in the Nikkei Asian Review, is Beijing yields as more countries become wary of Belt and Road debt trap. So I think it's pretty significant that countries are starting to take a look at this money that seems to be flowing from heaven and thinking, huh, there might be strings attached to this, as there always is, and we have not entered a new period of economic or geopolitical reality here. And I think people are starting to wake up to the fact that this big Belt and Road Initiative is essentially China taking a stake in all of its trading partners. And I think a lot of people are starting to really experience that for the first time.
Hmm. Well, you know, just the headline today I read where China is going to raise billions in a rare U.S. dollar debt as their trade tensions persist. They're planning a $3 billion bond sale, and this is actually the second one they've had in a year, and it's only its third since 2004. Does this play into what's happening with the One Belt, One Road type, or two totally separate issues?
Well, I mean, I think they are separate, but everything is kind of related, given that China's One Belt, One Road entire project has really been underwritten by their trade with the U.S. over the last couple of decades and their incredible trade surplus accruing all of those dollars. What are they going to do with all that reserve? Well, they're going to start spending it in infrastructure projects around the world to finance some actual infrastructure that they can use. So I think it's all part and parcel of the broader phenomenon. And just on the idea of China and issuing some bonds, an interesting story just to pop up in the last few days. Apparently, China's local government authorities are going to be issuing over 740 billion yuan of special bonds by the end of October to fund more infrastructure spending, and that's on top of 2.1 trillion yuan in regular borrowing. So they're greatly expanding their borrowing, and this is coming apparently as the Chinese central government is basically putting pressure on local governments to try to pick up the slack as the Chinese economy starts to cool off. Well, they're doing it basically by issuing bonds, by getting more into debt, which just recently, under old rules, the Chinese local governments were actually banned from directly running fiscal deficits. So they got around that by setting up companies to borrow indirectly from the bond market. Well, now they are issuing bonds directly. And this is, I mean, we've seen this game play out before where, hey, let's go into greater and greater debt to finance this economic growth. What could possibly go wrong? So there's a lot of things that could go wrong and seem to be going wrong in the Chinese economy right now. And one of the indicators of that is JP Morgan just downgraded Chinese stocks on the basis of the downturn that we're seeing as a result of this brewing trade war. And in fact, JP Morgan warned that we are looking at a full-blown trade war by next year, whatever that means precisely. But apparently it doesn't mean much to UBS, who is going out and saying, well, you know, actually, that this is a great buying opportunity for global investors. And so you have the head of China equities at UBS Group AG coming out and saying, I would definitely be a buyer from here. So they're trying to talk up the market, even as JP Morgan is trying to write it down. Either way, I think they're both speaking to the worries that are brewing over this trade war and how this can impact all sorts of things, including the need for the ratcheting up of debt on the local government level and on the central government level to try to counteract the flagging economy.
So is President Trump successful in his approach to dealing with China and the trade issues? In January, I believe the tariffs go from 10% to, what, 25%?
Yes, we are looking at a significant increase from here. And I think that, the short-term pain is absolutely being felt and is going to be felt much more severely by China in these coming months. My outlook remains that if China is able to weather the short-term storm, in the longer term, of course, all this does is serve to really increase the urgency of something like the Belt and Road Initiative, because obviously China is looking to diversify its exporting to try to get around from the Uncle Sam gorilla that is, you know, the albatross around its neck at this point, because of course Trump or anyone else could come along and just raise tariffs and do these types of things and wreak havoc in the Chinese economy. So they want to diversify as much as possible, which just gives them more incentive to engage in the Belt and Road Initiative. So ultimately, again, short term, there's no way that China is going to escape the pain of this. But if they can weather the storm, as I say, longer term, I think they're going to be essentially weaning themselves off of the U.S.
So who are the winners? Are there any winners, or are there any, who are the losers? Or
I want to say there are never any winners in these types of trade wars, but there are. They're usually the crony-connected banksters, and their corporate monopolies tend to come out okay. I don't think we're going to see, you know, Apple or Google or, you know, any of these corporate giants coming out the worst for all of this. The losers in trade wars are always the general public who have to buy goods at higher rates. I mean, essentially, let's not lose sight of the fact that tariff is essentially just a tax on foreign goods. So people are going to be paying more. And yes, that means that Walmart and others will have to change their business strategy to import less slave-made Chinese goods to basically sell at pennies on the dollar, which is great in the sense of, you know, bring manufacturing back home, all of that. A lot of people can get behind in the abstract. But when it starts hitting their wallet and you start getting these workers who are earning the same amount but suddenly having to pay more for the basic items, that's when we might see some political backlash from this. But again, that we're not going to see that in the short term. That's going to be the longer-term effect of this.
Do you believe that the tariffs and the rewriting of the trade agreements, they say they've rewritten NAFTA. You can look at it from both sides that, there's one or two issues that change, but pretty much it's still the same. And, you know, if you listen to others, it's a whole new agreement and so forth. So are these two items with the trade war, not the trade war, but the tariffs, and with the renegotiation of the trade agreements, you know, people believe that this will bring enough jobs that we'll be able to work our way out of our problem? I don't, subscribe to that talk, to that rhetoric. I think that our debt is way too big to ever be, quote-unquote, worked out of, but, I can be wrong.
I think if you ever tried to corner a supporter of these policies on what exactly the intended benefit here is, I think ultimately they'll concede that, yes, just essentially raising a tax on foreign goods is not going to help the economy necessarily. But if it brings some manufacturing or some jobs back to the U.S., that will be good for sort of securing and shoring up the economic health and viability of the American economy, which I think there is an argument to be made there. But I don't think that that is going to counteract the ultimate bigger picture of this, which, as we say, always comes back to the fundamental underlying issues of the economy, namely the monetary underlying base. What is this all built on? It's all built on these paper dollars from the Fed. And it is ultimately the Fed that's going to steer and manage this ship, because that's the way the system has been designed from the ground up. So we'll have to see what the raising of rates does to all of this. I think that will have a more powerful impact on the economy ultimately in the long run is the way that the Fed is handling this sucking up of the excess liquidity from the system and how fast they do that and in what implements increments and whether or not the economy can withstand it, given the fact that it's been built on this dream of ever-flowing easy credit from up top. And that's essentially what the economic growth of the past decade, growth, quote-unquote, has been all about. Can we get an actual manufacturing boom at this point? I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not holding my breath for it.
And the Feds, and you're right, they'll continue their talk was that they're going to continue to raise, I guess the big question is how high can they go until it has a major impact on the economy? How much can, we're already seeing numbers in housing and auto loans and things like that that's beginning to, creep downward with the issues of higher, rates.
Yeah. And I think this goes back to that fundamental question we've talked about before, the inversion of economic reality, where, bad news is good news because, we know that the Fed will step in and save the day. Well, we'll see. We'll see if the markets continue to believe that as the Fed continues to raise rates, and at what point they will stop believing that, I think, is the point at which we'll start to see at least the effect on the markets, which themselves, again, are not the economy. We've just been tricked into believing that by the way that things are reported on the nightly news. But if enough people believe it, it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And obviously business expectation is set by indicators like, what are the markets doing? Even if the majority of American citizens aren't invested in the markets anymore, so it doesn't directly affect them, at least it is some sort of bellwether that a lot of people use for investment decisions. And so, again, it's just a question of can and will and when will the rug be pulled out from under the status quo as it exists right now.
Well, it seems like everyone is preparing that rug is going to be pulled sooner than later. What do you think about the oil prices hitting $100 before it breaks? Or is it going to go higher? Are they going to...
It seems that they are pricing in higher prices longer term at this point. And it's interesting to watch because there was clearly, and it was admitted even openly in the mainstream media at the time, that the oil plunge that took place 4 years ago at this point was a part of a geopolitical strategy that was hatched out between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia primarily to basically target all of the countries in the state of the U.S. State Department's crosshairs. I mean, it hurt Russia, it hurt Venezuela, it hurt Iran, it hurt a lot of the countries that depend on oil income, and that the U.S. State Department happens to not like. So it was a geopolitical deal that may have gone too far, and you started to see the pain even in places like Saudi Arabia. So I think they wanted to reverse that for a while, and it looks like they're having some success with that, and we are now seeing talk of $100 barrel in oil, $100 per barrel oil in the near future. I tend to think that the interests that want higher oil prices generally overtake the interests that see that the value in lower prices. And so if I was a betting man, I would be betting on prices maintaining in this higher region rather than dipping back down. But I can't say for what period of time. And of course, it always depends on whatever, you know, backdoor dealings that are going on that we have no access to. Just reading a headline now about Saudi Arabia and Russia are apparently have struck a private deal to increase production to try to suppress oil prices again. But again, I mean, what do we know about this? All we're being told is something from Rothschild Reuters. I mean, who knows, right, about these private deals struck in private? We'll only find out about it after the fact.
I should have brought this into the when we were talking about China, but there's you know, more reporting how the U.S. and China military tensions are beginning to, I don't know if soar is the proper term for it or not, but perhaps there is tensions there. Is this just flexing of muscles? Is this just, you know, we can do this because you're doing that type thing? Is it meaningless? Is it, or something that it could build into something much more major?
I'm sorry, run that by me again. Which, what is the flexing of muscles?
The U.S. and China military tensions.
Oh, right. Yes.
There's been a risky incident in the South China Sea, and
let me put it this way. This is my trite, obvious saying for today. It is until it isn't. I mean, we can all roll our eyes and say, oh, yeah, I mean, this is just the usual chest thumping and it doesn't mean much. But again, unfortunately, when these military tensions get ramped up, it just means that things are on that edge where even if it isn't in the plans of the would-be controllers of world events, I mean, things can just happen. Things can go wrong. You can get the wrong hothead on the wrong day, you know, taking things in the wrong direction that can start a real war. And I'm not thinking that's happening in the near term, but again, as I say, the more these situations get ramped up, the more it's on the table as a potential, and we have to be concerned about that.
All right, we're heading into a break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Thank you for joining us. Tell me again. Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart it seems.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my guest, James Corbett, the founder and editor of The Corbett Report. Make sure you get to his website, thecorbettreport.com. Your most recent article is an editorial called Uncle Sam Doesn't Want You Anymore. And you asked about the old anti-war cliche, suppose they gave a war and no one came, and argue that the slogan could be closer to reality than what we really think. Can you tell us what you mean by that, James?
Yes, I'm picking up on a story that I saw at Japan Today, but is actually part of a wider phenomenon. Basically,
I believe we lost James.
Sorry about that. I was on mute because I've been doing this for 11 years, but still don't know how to use a mute button. So excuse my technical buffoonery. Yes. So this story, I picked up on a story from Japan Today that was talking about military recruiters here in Japan having a tougher time recruiting applicants than usual. And people might be surprised. Military recruiters in Japan? I thought Japan didn't have an offensive military, right? That's part of their constitution. Well, as I've talked about before, Japan has a stealth army, which is the self-defense force, quote-unquote, which is increasingly being used to aid in offensive missions. And they're trying to redefine the constitution to say, well, yeah, we said there'd be no offensive military, but what we really meant is we believe in the principle of collective self-defense. So if any of our allies get attacked, we can help them out, kind of thing. And you know, it's going to change and change, and eventually they're going to, I think, abolish Article 9 altogether from the Constitution. But anyway, there is a military in Japan. In fact, it's the sixth best funded military on the planet. And the military recruiters here have been having a tougher time lately trying to get new recruits. That has demographic reasons. As people know, there's a plummeting birth rate here in Japan, so the population is actually shrinking. And the number of 18 to 26 year olds, that kind of prime spot for recruiting, has gone down from 17 million 24 years ago to just 11 million today. And that squeeze has meant that there's more companies and universities competing for a shrinking pool of applicants. And on top of that, the military recruiters have to go in and try to stick their straw into that. So they're having troubles meeting their own recruiting targets right now. And as I say, this is just part of a wider sort of global phenomenon. We can track this in Russia, in Britain, in USA. A lot of different places around the globe are having harder and harder times meeting their quotas for new applicants to the military. So basically, my article starts off by, hey guys, isn't it great? You know, maybe this is the end of war because they can't get the people to fill the positions. But no, unfortunately not. The bad news is pretty soon they won't need people to fill all of those positions. And what am I talking about? Of course, I'm talking about the rise of the robot armies, which sounds like crazy science fiction.
It
what
does.
Are you talking about? Terminator 2? Like, what kind of nonsense are you dreaming up here, James? No. Sadly, I'm going from very mainstream news reports about the developments that are being made and the types of technologies we're just becoming accustomed to. I remember talking about drones and drone technology a decade ago, and a lot of people thought that was crazy conspiracy talk. Well, now that that's being normalized, we have this story. MQ-9 gets first air-to-air kill in training exercise, and this relates to the MQ-9 Reaper drone by General Atomics Aeronautical Systems, Inc., which a military source confirmed confirmed to military.com, has actually taken place in a controlled simulation late last year where this drone downed another drone. So it was the first air-to-air takedown, drone-to-drone, air-to-air combat, and it happened last year, and they're just telling us about it now. So, I mean, that is a significant event, and obviously it says something about the way warfare will be increasingly conducted from here on out, doesn't it? But actually, it gets even crazier, because DARPA has just announced, and I don't know, take this with whatever grain of salt you will, but it's coming from Defense One and it's coming from DARPA. They're talking about they now have the technology, and they're testing it out now, to be able to telepathically control not just a drone, but a drone swarm. That's right. Their brain-chipped super soldiers of the future are going to be able to telepathically control not one, not two, but up to three separate drones at the same time. And this is not just like a joystick, you know, with your mind where you're controlling a drone, but the drone will actually be able to send information back to the person about the environment that they're flying through. So literal telepathic communication with drones is already here and being tested out by DARPA as we speak. So again, these types of technologies, they sound crazy sci-fi and like they're a century in the distance, but unfortunately these technologies are, there's hundreds of millions of dollars per year being spent on this by the U.S. Defense Department in particular in their BRAIN initiative that they started back in 2014, I believe. And they've been working on it for years. And the UN itself is convening, although most people probably haven't heard about it, they're convening international conferences on what they call LAWS, L-A-W-S, Lethal Autonomous Weapon Systems, a.k.a. Killer Robots. And the most recent conference...
That just sounded funny.
It is. I mean, it is funny in a sense until you realize, you know, the seriousness. The situation. But it is crazy. I mean, it truly is. But their most recent conference, we saw the U.S., South Korea, Israel, Australia, and Russia coming together on the same page. They all banded together to, what did they all want to do? Block any attempt to ban the development of killer robots. Yes, there was a proposal on the table. We should ban this technology. We should make sure that we, you know, like nuclear proliferation, we must stop the proliferation of this technology. All of those states, including the U.S. and Russia, you know, arch enemies, came together to say, no, you will not block our attempts to develop this technology. So
real quick, what country do you think is ahead? Or are they all pretty equal?
That's the kind of thing where there's no way for us to know until an actual war takes place, because no military is ever going to say exactly what they have. And the things that they do say they have, you always have to take with a grain of salt, because maybe that's just propaganda intended to scare the enemy. So when DARPA comes out and say we can telepathically control drone swarms, it's crazy. It may be true, but, you know, let's believe it when we see it. But we won't see it until real warfare begins. And this is where I think the analysis of a lot of Russia watchers goes awry, because you get from some of these pro-Russia kind of sites out there in the independent media space that, oh, Russia has this advanced technology and they can take down any U.S. missile and they're so far ahead and their hypersonic weapons are going to be light years ahead of whatever the Pentagon has. I always say you don't know what the Pentagon has, and they're not telling you. There is so much technology that is developed under the radar, literally, I guess, that we don't know about until decades later, that there's just absolutely no way to know. And so, and again, unfortunately, the only real proving ground of these types of technologies is warfare itself. So I guess I hope we never find out ultimately what the Pentagon has in its skunk works.
Well, you know, though, if they have these toys, because basically that's what they are. I mean, you know, can you ever think of a great place to be where you can create this? I mean, it's real big toys, dangerous toys, so they're going to have a war to test them.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, you know, right. The toys for big boys. They got to use up the weapons they have
and test the
new ones. And that has been talked about with regards to the Gulf War, both the original Gulf War and Gulf War II, about the types of technologies they were testing out there that still we don't exactly know, but we've heard the stories and seen some of the pictures of entire cars and things being completely vaporized by some form of energy weapons that were being tested out there. But again, details are classified, and we won't really find out until, again, decades down the line. I mean, look at something like the SR-71 or even the U-2, developed in secrecy, used in secrecy for decades. Then they come out and announce it, and now we're expected to believe that, you know, the SR-71 is still, honest, it's still the fastest plane that's ever been developed. You know, yeah, it's like 50-year-old technology at this point, but honest, it's the best we have. I don't believe it.
And you know, with this technology that they're creating, when you bring it into, you know, bring it out of the, you know, whatever they're creating in the military, bring it into manufacturing, bring it into our everyday lives, and hey, we're not going to need the people. You're not going to need the people to fight wars. It's not going to provide jobs. So what's going to happen to the people? The people, yeah. There has to be a reduction of the people.
Yeah. It's
actually
sad.
How are the people going to be sustained?
Yeah, it's sad that you have to bring the job factor into it. But a lot of people do still believe, fervently, honestly believe, that it was World War II that brought us out of the Great Depression. So, you know, it might have been a horrible thing, but we had to do it. And, hey, it had this economic benefit. Well, actually, if you look at writers like Robert Higgs, Crisis and Leviathan, he goes into the economics of how that is actually not true. Sure. It was the retraction of the American government role in the economy after World War II, as they start to dismantle the military state, that was the real economic boon that now we see as the halcyon days of the 50s when everything was great. It was because the government contracted after the war. But anyway, that aside, yes, you're right. I mean, it's going to involve less actual humans in the loop in the next war, whatever that looks like, wherever it takes place. And that is, I mean, that's ominous for a number of reasons. I mean, I think there's just something fundamentally creepy about the idea of encountering, you know, this robot soldier that doesn't think, it doesn't feel, and it's probably, you know, 10 times stronger than a human and is programmed to kill you. You know, that's just a creepy idea. But worse than that is that it is programmed to kill or programmed to do whatever, as opposed to humans who can at least theoretically go against orders, defy orders, and not do things that would cause mass damage. And we can think of all sorts of scenarios where people are being encouraged to fire on protesters who are protesting, you know, the government's war, or people who are being encouraged to do some provocative action that they know will start World War III. You have to convince humans to actually do things like that, unless there are no humans in the loop and you can program your, you know, R2-D2, whatever, to do that very thing. And that, I think, is very worrying, because the last real hope we ever had was that people will defy orders when they see through the war lies and can be shown that this is all based on lies that are for the benefit of the very few at the very top and to the detriment of everyone else in the human race. People will, I still believe, will stand up and defy orders, but robots won't. So that's, I think, one of the worrying developments of all of this.
And if we had generals, if we had the top military brass that had some sort of, you know, we could put a little bit of trust, I shouldn't say trust or faith, but believe that, you know, they might have, keep a cool head, but we know that's not true.
No, but it has. I mean, let's,
or,
let's,
or let's, will it be more so?
There have been times where we have been, at least so we're told, on the brink of total annihilation and total nuclear conflict, like when, you know, Reagan's woken up at 3 a.m. with the message, you know, the Russians have just launched 57 missiles and they're coming, and it turns out to be a false alarm. And luckily, you know, people did at least forbear enough to not go on the full nuclear annihilation strategic offensive the second that they hear about those reports, because again, humans in the loop can make those decisions and decide we're not going to go to war over this. I think it's a false report. Again, depending on the way that the algorithms are programmed, you don't know the way that a computer-operated system is going to respond to those types of events. And, you know, I mean, look back at War Games, that 1983 film,
yes,
which seems prescient than ever. Go back and rewatch it. It actually raises some very important points as we move into this increasingly automated society.
And speaking of war, we're going to, that automatically brings up North Korea. I believe I heard that they were, I know they're removing, you know, some things at the borders and so forth and with the South Korea, and But I heard that they were not going to denuclearize until our military was gone. Did I hear correctly, or was that a miss?
That is the latest from Pyongyang. Yes, they're willing to look at the idea of denuclearization when the U.S. does so. So I think that's pretty much a non-starter, as we would expect. I don't think anyone was really expecting any sort of drastic breakthrough here. This has been essentially the North Korean position for the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I don't see why that would change at this point. But you are right. There is now joint efforts with North and South Korea to demine the demilitarized zone. They're removing 2 million landmines that are estimated to be littering that area. So that's a positive step. It's a good thing. But as I wrote about a couple of weeks ago in the Forecaster, is the Korean War over yet? Spoiler, no, it isn't. And the long answer is in that editorial, but essentially it boils down to OPCON. The U.S. maintains operational control of South Korean military forces in the event of war. So it is actually in the Pentagon planner's interests, if a war is engaged, to basically fight to the last South Korean. They'll be happy to annihilate the South Korean army to get the North Korean army, as long as, you know, we don't have to commit too many American forces to such a fight. So until OPCON is removed and the South Koreans actually maintain wartime control of their own military, I think that danger is not really gone, and any sort of peace agreement that's signed in the meantime is kind of meaningless.
Is that what South Korea wants, though?
Maybe. I think the current president of South Korea, Moon Jae-in, I think is serious about these overtures, but it's a long way to go to get there, and there's a lot of opposition from the right wing in South Korea who would very much prefer to see U.S. military presence maintained.
And would the U.S. just pull out anyway, ever, with President Trump?
No. not a chance. I again, another thing, I'll believe it when I see it. I just don't think the U.S. is leaving.
All righty, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining me today. I do so enjoy it, and the listeners, I love to hear your insights on what's happening in the world today. And we'll be back tomorrow late. So God bless. Thank you, James.
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.